Welcome to the Startups Middle East podcast. I'm your host, Evrim, and I interview startup founders and people relevant to startups all around the Middle East. In this episode, I'm interviewing John Kilmartin. John is the executive director of the ICT division of the Bahrain Economic Development Board. He's responsible for promoting Bahrain as a regional hub to global technology companies and supporting the startup ecosystem in Bahrain. John is definitely one of my favorite people in the startup ecosystem here. He's friendly, honest, responsive, and he's straight to the point. A quick note about this interview to avoid confusion. This was recorded in 2017, so when we say next year, we mean 2018. Here's the interview. John, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Evrim. Thanks for having us.
So we'll be talking about EDB, of course, and your work there. But before there, tell us a little bit about yourself. What did you do before EDB? What's your background? What did you study? Did you have any entrepreneurial experience? Let us know a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I suppose my entrepreneurial experience goes back to how I grew up. I grew up in Ireland. I grew up in on a farm. So my father was a farmer, and it's not an obvious entrepreneurial, but obviously you have, you're raising animals, you're producing produce, and you're selling that, and all the. The asset management, yeah. And you're dealing with finance, you're dealing with suppliers, you're dealing with produce and moving that on. So I guess my entrepreneurial experience comes from that. So when I work in an organization, and I've worked in three different organizations now, I guess that kind of comes naturally, in that you're looking at a budget. And you take responsibility for that budget, and you take ownership for that budget, and there's a little bit of being flexible with that budget, in terms of you're used to juggling stuff, stuff coming at you that your plan might be one thing, but actually execution is on another thing, and I think it all comes back to how I grew up and how involved we were in the family business. From day one, we were involved, and my dad made sure that we were aware of the finances. So it wasn't just the work and the chores that we had to do, but it also, he showed us and brought us into, where we made money and where we lost money. So, maybe that's kind of from my entrepreneurial. I've never set up a company. I've worked in three different organizations. I worked with Deloitte Consulting when I first left university. I coded for a number of years there, mainly with SQL. Because I worked with Oracle Forms and Reports, also worked with quite a bit of database work in Oracle as well. And then in my time in Deloitte, I moved into systems implementations, particularly SAP implementations, and different strategy work as well. From there, I joined the IDA, the Irish Development Authority. And they do a very similar role to EDB, but maybe a little bit more defined, in that they look to attract foreign direct investment from technology, from a number of different sectors, but the sectors that I worked in was technology primarily. So I would have worked with them about 8 years. My last assignment was in India. So I was in India for 3 years working with Indian companies coming to Ireland. Before that, I worked a lot with US companies, particularly in San Francisco. And in that time, we focused on startups, but startups in a US context. So they would have been maybe companies that are sub 20 million in revenue and sub 200 people in terms of headcount. That's actually quite a large startup in a Middle East context, but in a US context where you're looking at that startup to expand past the US borders, that was still fairly early stage. So we're still dealing with companies that were relatively early stage. They may have been 3 or 4 years old at that point, and they were expanding into Europe, and we were looking to get them to expand into Ireland. So I would have worked with a lot of those companies quite closely, and I guess that's where some of my experience with startup would have come from, and then linking into the Irish startup scene as well, which is a little bit more advanced than the Middle East, but not at the American stage. But I would have linked in with a lot of the Irish startup scene, because the US startups wanted to access that as well. So to use that network, to use that ecosystem to help their settling into Ireland and into Europe in general.
That's very interesting. So from a farm to tech companies and tech startups, did you have interest in tech, or did it just happen itself?
I probably did, but it's funny, when I interviewed for Deloitte, the managing partner, I can always remember, we were in a room. It was kind of I suppose a storeroom or a tech room. There was a whole load of PCs lying around, some of them half open, and it was almost like an IT supports room, because there was PCs everywhere. And he asked me a very telling question, I thought, and he said, "Well, if I weren't here, would you go over and boot up any of those PCs and start playing with them?" And I decided that I'd answer very truthfully, because my answer and my attitude to tech is, it's not a plaything. So I will only use it if I have a use for it. So it's like saying, maybe, you know, if you're into cars, are you going to drive a car just for the sake of driving it? Are you driving a car to get from A to B? My attitude is, I'm using technology to get from A to B, not using technology for the sake of technology.
I see. All right, so let's talk about EDB. I came to Bahrain about 3 years ago, and when I first arrived here, there was very little in terms of startups, and the startup ecosystem was pretty much non-existent. There were some events once every quarter or so, but that was pretty much it. And I remember about, I think, a year ago, when I went to a certain event where I met you, there was a professor, I think, talking about creating startup ecosystems in different places and what should be done for that. And after that, my experience here in Bahrain changed a lot. I see things are moving not as fast as, of course, startup people want to, but they're moving in the right direction. And compared to 3 years ago, it's the acceleration is amazing. So EDB is doing something right, and you know, they hired you and people like yourself. What are you doing at EDB? What is the plan of EDB for the startup ecosystem in Bahrain?
Well, the first thing, and thanks for kind of acknowledging that things are moving and things are changing. The first thing I would like to say is that I'm not going to take responsibility or full responsibility for that change. Khaled, our CEO, has a big part to play. Simon Galpin, our MD, has a huge part to play in setting the vision for startups. So while I and my team and the wider Startup Bahrain initiative implement a lot of the vision, without the support of Simon and Khaled, we wouldn't be able to achieve what we have. The driver behind Startup Bahrain is, I think it's maybe two or even threefold. One is acknowledging the fact that we actually have and have had a good startup ecosystem here in Bahrain way before the Startup Bahrain initiative was launched. So you had initiatives like ROAD, you had UNIDO setting up, you had CH9 setting up. So there was kind of things happening on the ecosystem side. You also had startups that were operational. So, you know, PayTabs predates Startup Bahrain. Skiplino predates, and I could go on. You know, there's a lot of startups that predate Startup Bahrain. So, you know, it startup didn't start with this initiative, far from it. But what we were looking to do was to accelerate the initiative. So, you know, there was good things happening. How do we increase that? How do we amplify? Make it easier for entrepreneurs and for companies to get up and running, and also increase the ambition of those companies. So rather than a company just thinking about the Bahraini market, can they think about how do they bring their product or service to the region and global market as well? So that was certainly one of the reasons behind the initiative. The other reasons is a bit more wider than just startup, but they're all linked. So you know, you've probably heard particularly Khaled and Simon talk about the desire to move to a digital economy and a more knowledge-based, tech-based economy. Well, startup plays a big part in that. But we also want to bring in more traditional businesses, be they SMEs or be they larger corporates. How are they playing a part in developing new products and services? So where are they playing in the innovation space? Now, the line between when you talk about innovation, you know, whether you're talking about a startup or you're talking about a corporate, you know, sometimes they're quite similar. So the way we see what we're doing on the Startup Bahrain side is we can work with corporates almost in the same way. So how can corporates become part of what's happening on the startup side, learn from startups, guide startups? So, you know, how can they be the mentors and how can they be investors? So it allows them to bring in an element of innovation into their businesses, and that helps the overall economy. So, you know, I certainly don't see startup in isolation from innovation in university, innovation in corporates, and SMEs and startup linked to that. I think they're all linked. And a lot of the initiatives, particularly from maybe the education side of things. So if we're looking at the pillars that we're working on, you know, the education side, the policy and regulation, they're very applicable to a corporate the same way as they are to a startup.
I understand. So could you tell us a little bit about how the EDB is helping startups? So let's say, for all the listeners who don't know how EDB can help them, there might be some people who are interested in starting a startup. What is the support that you guys give to an entrepreneur or to a startup?
So there's kind of two sides to what we're working on. So one of the jobs of the EDB is to create an environment for startup. So, you know, that we are making sure that whether a startup contacts EDB directly or not, that if they're in Bahrain or they're coming to Bahrain, that you know, they can find their way through the ecosystem quite easily, whether they have the support of EDB, the direct support of EDB. So you know we're working on six different pillars there. We're working on community to make sure that there are more community events to allow that networking to happen. And also knowledge sharing. We're working on incubators and accelerators. So you'll be aware that C5 and CH9, ROAD have been up and running. And in the new year, we'll be adding Brink and two more as well. So, you know, that's the incubators and accelerators. There'll be a number of co-working spaces that I'm aware of setting up in the new year as well. You know, they're going to be the hub of startups. So as you as a startup want to find out more about startup, you know, they're going to be the spaces that should be the focal point for startup. We're also working on funding. So how do we ensure that if you have a good idea, you can get it funded. You can access angels, you can access VCs, and maybe some government funding in there as well. Education is a big thing. How do we ensure that the skills exist? Corporates is another pillar where we're trying to tie in and get corporates interested in startup, involved from an investor perspective, a first customer, mentors, in whatever way makes sense for their business, but get that engagement and involvement. And then policy and regulation, and that's where we're changing quite a number of some legislative change and other just more policy and practice within government to make it easier to operate. And we're working with the Ministry of Industry and Commerce, and we have a committee that's headed by Minister Zayani, the Minister of Industry and Commerce. And so we've set out quite a number of areas that we're going to work on jointly, because the interest point of industry and commerce is on the SME side. So they're very keen that the same innovation that's happening at startup could also flow through into SMEs. And don't forget that a startup is an SME for quite a long part of its life as well. So there's good synergies there, and we're working on that. In terms of how does EDB directly engage with startups, primarily we engage with overseas startups. So we're looking to encourage overseas startups to set up in Bahrain. So we're, you know, we have offices overseas, and they meet with startups. Now, we do make a distinction. So when, you know, when we have offices in the States, or we've offices in China or Japan, we're not really asking them to approach entrepreneurs. We expect that they are speaking to companies that are scaling up. So again, if I go back to my Irish experience, so we're looking at a company that has the product, they have the serve, they have the people, and they have the finances to actually expand into a new region, and they want to access a new region. But because they're pretty early in their development, they like and understanding, feel comfortable in a startup ecosystem. So they like the idea of not taking an office space, but, you know, taking a space in an incubator. They like the idea of joining a program like C5s, which aims to help companies to scale. And that helps them to scale into the region. It's a helping hand. It's a soft landing approach. So it works really, really well for them. And but particularly C5 right now, CH9, have quite a number of companies that fit that profile, where we would have met them overseas. We would have talked to them about Bahrain. We would have talked to them about the market in the region as well, and the opportunity within the region. And then perhaps brought them in here on a visit. So we host visits as well. So if startup is coming in here and they want to see, because seeing is believing, we'll actually set up a number of meetings and a trip for perhaps a day or two to actually get them comfortable with the ecosystem. And then we would introduce them to the incubators, accelerators, and sometimes they go independent and set up independent. Sometimes they will set up in those incubators and accelerators and take their programs and take advantage of that. So that's really how we help companies, and we do that on a very individual basis. So, you know, we don't try and take a cookie cutter approach, because every company is just slightly different. So we try to ask the questions or answer the questions that are relevant to that company. And then other things that are available. So we introduce them to support partners as well, whether that's recruitment companies, it could be estate agents, it could be legal firms for the registration, and accountancy firms and agents that help companies with the documentation that's required for setup. And then obviously Tamkeen as well, so, you know, other government agencies that help companies. So we'll introduce them to Tamkeen, to BDB, to avail of the different supports that they have as well.
That's very interesting to listen for me, because as a startup founder in Bahrain, I only see a part of what you guys are doing, and all the other things that you mentioned, I don't have any experience with those. So it's very interesting to listen.
Yeah. Well, in some respects, Evram, that's the plan, because if government is too involved, then it's probably the ecosystem isn't very developed. If an ecosystem is developed, then government should actually stand back.
So
our job is to create the environment that allows you to do what you want to do. But in an ideal scenario, you shouldn't need our help to do it. You know, it should be obvious. It should be there already. And we should, I think President Obama put it quite well: make the coffee and get the hell out of the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how long have you been here in Bahrain? About a year and a half?
Year and a half. May 2016, I arrived.
Okay. So you must have had a certain vision. You guys, must have had a certain vision as to what you should achieve in the first year and a half, by this time. How are things going in your perspective?
I think they're quite good. I think one thing you've got to remind yourself of all the time is what you have achieved rather than what you would like to achieve. So, particularly this time of the year, you're coming to the end of the year. Our expectations and our aspiration is quite high. And that matches, founders like yourself and entrepreneurs like yourself, that you want to see things move bigger, better, faster all the time. And so do we. But you have to kind of put it in the context of where we're coming from. I think there's a few things that have been achieved this year. I think one of the very big ones is the ability for incubators and accelerators to be properly licensed. So and that allows them to operate in a real meaningful way. And that was a very key thing to get done this year. And we're seeing some of the fruits of that. We also have attracted in additional incubators and accelerators, and they're going to be key to driving the ecosystem. We work hand in glove with those incubators, accelerators. They're almost the university for startup, and they're going to be key for quite a while until we build up that experience of founders doing it for themselves and being able to pass on that information to new founders. So until we have an ecosystem that's self-sustaining, the idea of incubators and accelerators will be key. So having new entrants like Brink coming in, we've two others that will be setting up in the early part of next year as well. C5 has really made massive strides this year. CH9 is making good strides. I mean, their space is filling up. So, you know, the incubator accelerator side of things is working really well. We're making progress on funding as well, obviously a bit slower than we'd all like to happen. So we're building some structures within government. We're working with angel investors, and we've got, we've run, I think it's three InvestEd programs this year where we look to encourage more people to angel invest and then teach them how to do it. To protect themselves, but also to offer the greatest value to startups, so that it's not just a financial investment, that they'll understand their commitments go a bit wider to startups than just writing a check. So that's worked really well, and we're also working on a fund of funds to bring in VCs and to have VCs more active in the marketplace here. We've run a number of events this year to try and bring that community together. I think the technology tent in October was acknowledged as a good success. We're going to build on that next year. So we're going to have 2 weeks next year. We're going to have a week in March that's focused very much on Startup Bahrain. And it's built around an event called Unbound, and that's on the first week of March. And we'd hope to have a week of, we're putting in place a week of different events on that week. And we'll also run another week in October, which will mirror pretty much the technology week this year. So we want to kind of combine things next year a little bit more, where we concentrate our efforts and ensure that we can get visitors to come in and understand what Bahrain has to offer. Bahrain has a huge amount to offer companies and particularly tech companies. So we want to showcase that and give a reason why somebody will come in, not just for one event, but for a number of different events. So there's a number of areas that have been quite successful. There's also a lot of work ongoing that hasn't really come to fruition yet. And that's particularly relevant in the space of the policy and regulation. As everybody probably understands, government never works as fast as we would like it to. So, you know, it takes time to get proposals through. It takes time to get legislation through. We're working very hard to get a lot of the environmental stuff in place. Bankruptcy comes high on the agenda there. So to improve the bankruptcy laws, But ease of registration comes high on the agenda there, and ease of doing business. There's quite a number of other policies and regulations that have been worked on to make it easier to operate and allow you to be more successful quicker. So it's a combination of some good things that have been delivered, but a lot of things that are being worked on that hopefully will come to fruition next year, and then that helps to drive the environment again.
I mean, your comment about the government—it's just governments don't work as fast as we would like them to, and sometimes it's a good thing because you don't want a government to make a decision without really considering the consequences of that decision. So it's a good thing if there's some kind of thinking going on. They're working on making sure that everything is right, done right. That's a good thing. But sometimes things go slow because people are not working hard enough. Then it's a problem. So the balancing that is the key, I think.
I don't disagree. I think you're spot on. You sometimes do things and you don't see the unforeseen consequences. So, you need to, and sometimes you will never, you can plan all you want and you may not even see those. So, you need to be flexible on both sides. You can't plan and spend too much time planning. You've got to execute as well. And then you've got to be nimble and flexible to say, okay, that's not working. And we need to change tack. I think that's one of the things that I've been very impressed with Khaled, our CEO. He's very open. He doesn't want to see things not working well, but there's no point in, if something hasn't worked, you have to acknowledge it and you have to change it and move on. There's no point in doubling down on something that's obviously not working. So you've got to be honest with yourself, you've got to be honest with your colleagues, and particularly within government sometimes that can be hard. But ultimately, you need to do that. Now, obviously, you possibly don't need to do that very often. You give yourself your ability to get support again might be quite tough. But if something obviously isn't working, then I think we need to acknowledge that. We need to change it, and we need to move on from there.
Hey there, it's Ivram again. I hope you're enjoying the interview. Before we continue, though, I have a quick announcement to make. I'm the founder of a startup called Automated Hotel, and we're working on redefining the guest experience in the hospitality industry. The guest experience is still very traditional in hotel rooms: print menus and marketing materials, phone calls for requests. We are developing in-room tablets that allow hotel guests to manage their stay and request services from the hotel, while helping the hotel collect insightful guest data and save staff time. No matter where you're listening to this from, if you're a software developer with experience in React Native or Ruby on Rails, or if you're an investor interested in investing in an opportunity like this, or if you're just interested in the idea and would like to connect with me, I'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with me at evrim@automatedhotel.com. It's evrim@automatedhotel.com. Or by sending a message through the contact form on startupsmiddleeast.com. All right, back to the interview. So let's talk about the future. For example, next 5 years. What is EDB's vision for the next 5 years? Just tell us about, 5 years from now, what do you think we will have in Bahrain? What kind of an ecosystem we will have?
I'd love to have a crystal ball to understand what that looks like.
Your EDB's vision. What are you intending to?
Sure. Yeah. Look, what we're working off, or what our KPIs are, is around numbers of startups. So we're at about sub 100 startups right now. Now we're very jealous about how we define those startups. So, when we talk about startup, we're not just talking about a tech startup, while the vast majority of them are tech and have a tech element. And I guess it's hard for any startup right now in any sector to set up that doesn't have a tech element. There's a tech element in everything. But what we're really after are startups that have that ambition to grow, to grow within Bahrain quite quickly, to grow outside Bahrain, be that regionally or be that globally, to have a product or service that can go cross-border, that has the ability to create real value, disrupt and ultimately create employment for Bahrainis and opportunities for Bahrainis. So you know that's what we ultimately want. And I'm going to use PayTabs as the prime example of that. You know, they've set up in Bahrain. They've built a product, payments and security product from scratch, and they have implemented that across 20 plus countries, mainly in Asia, and employed over 100 people in doing that. And you know, so if we were to take that's the standard that we would want to get out there. So success in the next few years would be having a couple of hundred startups operating, but with a lot more names than PayTabs. So you take PayTabs, you take One GCC, and hope that grows out to the same extent. You take Malab, you take FishMe. The list would go on, but we need those companies to be operating internationally and growing to the same extent. We also do need some significant investment in those companies. So success is also that those companies are raising finance, that perhaps some of those companies get an exit. I do think what will be very important for the ecosystem is that the entrepreneurs that are working right now get success that they're due, be able to take an exit of whatever format that comes, and put some money into their pocket, because the experience in most startup ecosystems is the best investors are former founders. They'll do two things. They will always set up another company. So, you know, a founder that's been successful very rarely, you know, sits on their laurels, and particularly because they're generally, you know, quite young. So they're not going to sit around. They're going to set up another company. And generally, once they've been through the experience once, they're going to do it again, and they'll build value a second and a third time. So that's important. But they also support other founders and other startups, and they do it in a very interesting and meaningful way, because they're bringing their experience, their direct experience of growing a startup. So that's going to be really interesting to see. Firstly, how many major investment rounds can be achieved over the next few years, and then exits as well. Are we building companies of true value that other people are seeing? But even if there's no exit, even if we're looking at a couple of hundred startups, and there's maybe 10 or 15 of them that are driving significant revenues and creating significant employment, well, then that's a real positive as well. So I'm not throwing out definitive KPIs, but they're the kind of things we're looking at. We're looking at number of startups. We're looking at the number of people that are employed in those startups. We're looking at how much is being invested in those startups, and then potential exits, because that shows you the health of the ecosystem over time.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's say, you know, you could fix one thing in the startup ecosystem in Bahrain. You have some magic powers. You could just snap your finger and fix one thing. What would that one thing be?
Whoa. Yeah.
What's the thing? What I'm trying to get at is, what is the thing that you're maybe trying hard to fix, but it's not going fast enough, or, you know, something that would give the best outcome.
I think it's funding. I think it's just it's and I do realize that that's, you know, you'll talk to some startup founders that funding isn't a problem, and you'll talk to others where it's a huge problem. But I do think if we can have a more layered funding options available. And I'm not just talking about government here. I'm talking about, so, you know, we should have some grant aid available to tech startups. And you know, Tam Keen certainly does a great job. But the funding available to tech startups isn't always as clear. So a different type of startup can walk into Tam Keen and come out with a really good answer. That's not always the case for tech startups. So I do hope that changes, and I know it will in 2018. So, you know, that's certainly one. Having more angels active as well will really help, and having VCs more active in Bahrain. Those VCs don't always need to be Bahraini VCs. It's just that we're building that network to allow companies to access funding at the right time, so that it becomes less of a chore. It's never easy, no matter in what ecosystem you're in. It's never easy to raise money, but that there's that at least it's the right paths are there, the right connections are there to make it easier. I think finance, I think the other area, and again, I think saying that there's one thing is quite difficult. I think skills development we need to do work on that as well. So skills development, funding, and corporates from a customer perspective. I think for corporates to understand that they, you know, they can get great advantage from purchasing from startups would create a huge plus for the startups themselves. And when I say corporates there, from a procurement perspective, I include government. Government can do a better job purchasing from startups.
So you mentioned you would like to see not just startups that are relevant to the region, which is a good thing, but, you know, there's more that can be done. There are, you know, startups like paid apps. So one issue that I'm seeing is, so, I mean, let's look at Silicon Valley. It's always a bad thing to look at Silicon Valley from here, but let's look at it for a moment. Let's say you want to start a company there. Funding is much easier. And you can hire the best talent. Let's say, I don't know how much, let's say a Bahraini gets, or someone in Bahrain gets about $60,000 a year if they're working at a good job. A junior software developer maybe gets $100,000 a year in the Silicon Valley. So they get the best talent. So how can you start a startup here that will compete with the startups in Silicon Valley? What can an institution like EDB do to foster that kind of how can you make it easier for startups here to compete with startups there? Because that's the reality. We have a global, we need to look at it from a global scale. We're competing with them. That's a difficult question, I know, but
no,
you know,
no, just, it is, and look, a lot of it comes down to the solution. So, you know, once you get past a certain scale, it's actually not the ecosystem that you're in that dictates. It's how good your solution is. So, you know, you take pay tabs, for instance. You know, they are implemented across 20 countries. It kind of doesn't matter after a while whether you're from Bahrain or you're from Silicon Valley. It depends on whether your solution is good enough. And also, have you got the finance? And that is really key to growing out, to scaling, having the backers that have the pockets to do that. One of the things that Silicon Valley is really good at, and America is really good at, but Silicon Valley has really got it, is they really understand that you need to finance a company both on the product development side, but also on the marketing side, to grow at the scale and at the speed that you know, we all know the stories of Silicon Valley. Now, if I were to put myself in the European context, and I would have traveled quite a bit with IDA across Europe, and we were again targeting those scale-up companies. And one of the things that I was finding was seeing that difference in how VCs in Europe fund startups and VCs in the US. And the primary difference was the understanding that a VC in the US will provide extra funding for the marketing and expansion of the product and the service and the startup. Whereas the European VCs, and I think we might fall into the same bracket here, where we value spending money on product and building out the product. We don't always value the spending on building the right team, and we certainly don't value spending on marketing. But you have to see the company as a whole and put enough money into it to allow it to grow and expand. Although it can't expand if it hasn't got the money to do it, whether that's digital marketing costs. Traditional marketing, whether it's travel and BD resources, that has to form part of the plan. And for our companies to grow, we need to have that greater understanding that companies have to be well funded and the plan has to be well rounded. But once you're in that space of, you know, having a product or a service that can grow out, I think it's mind over matter whether you come from Bahrain or you come from Dubai or you come from Silicon Valley. You pick your region and you have to adapt to that region. So if you're a Silicon Valley company or you're a Bahraini company and you're trying to access the Korean marketplace, you still have to adapt your service and you still have to have the resources to do that correctly. So I think we can get caught up on the Silicon Valley guys have it easier. I think we need to move past that. We're not going to replicate Silicon Valley anytime soon. And I don't think we need to. We can create our own ecosystem here and do it in our own way. And still achieve some great things.
I definitely agree with that. You know, copying Silicon Valley is a bad idea. But it is also a fact that we still need to compete with companies there in terms of many things, not just, creating something that is relevant. It's also like they get the best talent. Let's say, you know, compare.
But they you can't say that. Not every coder across the world. You look at the value that's been built in China. You look at the value that's been built in startup across, you know, Scandinavia. And you take Scandinavia, you take Estonia as an example and Latvia. You know, there's tremendous the value that has been built in those countries.
Of course.
So there's talent everywhere. And Silicon Valley doesn't suck up all the talent.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I agree.
You know, so there's enough talent in this region. And one of the things that Bahrain can do is, you know, we have a unique environment here, particularly from a lifestyle perspective. The ability to be able to bring in people from across the world. Talent is now the primary thing in terms of tech. So, you know, being able to have an environment where you can attract talent too. So, you know, for obvious reasons, you know, Silicon Valley might be finding it a bit harder to attract talent right now. That may open a door for Bahraini startups to say, well, look, here's a location that you can come and set up. And the reality for, you know, you were talking about wages. You know, I would have dealt with companies where, you know, they're paying $100,000 for a graduate just out of Stanford. And they were able to come to Ireland and take on a developer that had 10 years experience for less than the 100K. So Silicon Valley isn't the be all and end all. And I don't think we should. We can compete. If you've got the right solution, and Paytabs proves this out all the time. Skiplino proves this out. Skiplino is implemented in Harvard. You know, if that wasn't a good solution, do you think Harvard would be interested in taking it on?
No,
it's a good solution.
I'm not really talking about any specific startup or saying that there's no way of creating anything of value here. That's definitely not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, in terms of like the population of startups, in terms of numbers, and you know, obviously there's. You know, we will not get to a Silicon Valley level. That's for sure anytime soon. That it doesn't happen overnight. But, you know, having a couple companies here compared to having, you know, hundreds or thousands, or maybe like a more specific example, let's compare Paytabs to Stripe. Let's say we have a developer who is very talented and he can go work for Paytabs or go work for Stripe. So if all things being equal, just the name of Stripe, you know, just because putting something like that on your CV is a big deal.
Sure, but not everybody works for Stripe and Google. And Google can't hire everybody. You know, we're on a planet of 7 billion people. So yeah, look, that same issue happens all the time. You know, what do we need to do? We need to create more talent. We need more local talent. We need to attract more talent to Bahrain. But that's a different question for me, at least, than saying, you know, we need to compete with Silicon Valley for talent. You take Berlin. Berlin has done a fantastic job with attracting talent into Berlin. It's built itself up as a startup hub within Europe on the back of three or four companies. You know, you go back probably 10, 15 years ago, not even 10, 15, probably 6, 7 years ago, I was traveling over and back to Berlin, and their ecosystem wasn't that terribly developed. But and the government has had some action to it, but they also from you know, founders coming from outside, employees coming from outside, they now built the ecosystem that they were talking about 10 years ago. So they can now talk about multiple startups and, you know, multiple success stories. And the Samwer brothers through Rocket Internet had a huge part to play in that. So this can be done. It's not going to be done overnight, but it can be done. And I don't think it's about Silicon Valley or Berlin or London, or, you know, we've got a region here, a market here of 1.5 trillion. And there's opportunities for startups in that marketplace. And the market is different. So you can't just transplant a solution. You take e-commerce. The e-commerce solutions, you know, why did Amazon buy Souq? It's because they kind of learned from their India experience that, yeah, their model works in Europe and it works in the US, but it didn't work in India. You know, the Flipkart model and Snapchat e-commerce company, but Flipkart was, their model was tweaked for India, and Amazon had to do the same thing. They had to change their model. So you look at, you know, why did Amazon buy Souq? I'm not that close enough, but I can guess that it's that they didn't want to go through that learning again. They bought Souq because Souq had gone through that learning. They understand how to access this region, and then Amazon will bring their, you know, their buying power and their status and their name and brand and amplify that.
They're minimizing risk, yeah.
Yeah, but it shows that there's an opportunity. So, you know, that's in the e-commerce space. There's an opportunity in the healthcare space here. What could be built around the healthcare space that's unique to this region? You know, so they're the opportunities, and you know, the talent. Look, Silicon Valley isn't going to suck in all the talent. There's
no, definitely not all, but you know, a good amount of it.
Correct. But you know, there's enough examples of other ecosystems. You take Bangalore; they're building out masses of companies at the moment. Some of them, I would have visited a lot of them. They're on a cusp of, you know, they will be creating companies similar to Silicon Valley over the next 20 years. It just takes a little bit of time for those companies to become world dominant. You know, there's very, very positive companies coming out of India that are growing out. And I've no doubt that we'll see that in the region here as well.
I think also one of the most important things is making Bahrain a more interesting place to move to. For example, Dubai did a very good job with that. It's an attractive place. People are interested in saying, maybe I should just go live in Dubai for a couple of years at least. So I think we should, that's probably not, you know, what the EDB is concentrating on, that's outside your, you know, scope, but an important part of getting talent here is making Bahrain a more interesting place. And some issues in the region, political issues, are definitely not helping, in my opinion.
Well, you know, we all play in a wider field here. I think what Dubai has done, you know, they have portrayed themselves very, very well. I think we can certainly learn from that. You know, we can all do better. But one thing we should note and we should promote is the very good indexes and surveys that we get consistently around quality of life in Bahrain. So we have HSBC do a survey every year, and Bahrain tops that survey for expats' satisfaction rates. So the thing about Bahrain for me, and you are right, you know, if we can get it understood what Bahrain actually offers to people here, it can be a tremendous asset for startups, because you know, expats consistently say that they're very, very happy in Bahrain. Now, what does that do from a startup's perspective or a corporate's perspective? It firstly allows allows you to attract people to Bahrain. And the second thing is it allows you to keep those people. So the worst thing you want is an environment where, yeah, you can get in people and they come in for a couple of years and then they leave. Now, you know, you're setting up a startup. Corporate knowledge is hard. So, you know, you don't want that turnover of staff, particularly key staff. You know, the longer you can keep a really good person, the more value they're going to deliver for you. So that's very important that we portray ourselves. So I think a lot of the time we're probably not telling the story the way we need to. So we need to be more confident about the story we're telling and promote it a bit more, because I do think while we certainly have room for improvement, but we also have a very good story to tell.
John, I have a lot of questions to ask, but I also want to be respectful to your time. So if you don't mind, I'll just ask a couple more personal questions, just move away from EDB a little bit. So you're pretty fast at responding emails, and you know you're very responsive as a person. So how do you manage your time? Do you use any tools, any methodologies?
I probably don't manage it as well as you think I do. I try to get back to people quite quickly. I do think response time is very, very important. I suppose one of the things that I struggle with is trying to maintain that responsiveness. Now I do, you know, there's four of us in the team, so we get to divide things a little bit, and we get support from that perspective. But one of the things that I would be very strong on is trying to prioritize things. So trying to decide up front what's important. I'm a big believer in creating to-do lists and trying to work off those. I use my calendar pretty religiously. So, if a meeting's logged in the calendar, I'm going to take that meeting. I also use my calendar for reminders. So for anybody looking at my calendar, it might be quite strange, but before probably about 7 o'clock in the morning, there'll be a whole load of different notes in there, and they'll be all things that I want to achieve in that day. They might get moved to the next day, but eventually they get done. So I believe that you have to create lists, and you have to remind yourself sometimes, because other things get lost in the day to day. So I would say work through your calendar, create lists, but also don't be afraid to bring in other people if you can't do everything. So sometimes you need to ask for that help. You need to delegate.
That's what it boils down to, right? Just there are a lot of complex tools, but a good to-do list and keeping stuff in, you know, organizing your calendar. It works pretty well, I think. Yeah. How about stress? How do you handle stress when you feel down? I can't imagine working at EDB at your position is a very simple thing to do. So how do you handle stress when you're facing a challenge? Do you have any habits for handling?
I probably exercise. I do like to exercise. I do find that it manages to calm me down. So, I'm not a massive socializer. I'm not a drinker. I do like to. So I swim and I run, and I've taken up road cycling in the last few months as well, and I kind of like that. So I like the idea of getting out. As I said, I grew up in the countryside in Ireland. I like being out in the open. I like doing physical work. So, you know, at home I would have done a lot of DIY. I don't get the opportunity to do that here. So I've kind of turned to sport, which I would have done in my younger days, but maybe I would have played a lot more team sports. But yeah, just getting out and clearing that mind. And you know, a lot of what I do in work is very much behind a desk, sitting down. So I think, you know, you need to kind of tire yourself out physically as well. I'm not an Ironman. I'm far from it. But, you know, doing an hour cycle or an hour swim or a half an hour run, you know, a few times a week, certainly helps with just kind of keeping things ticking over.
That's very interesting. What about DIY? What kind of DIY stuff? Give us some examples. Oh,
you're going to embarrass me now.
I'm curious now. You said it yourself.
My wife and I bought an old house. It was built in 1801, and we had to do the renovation of that. So
that sounds interesting.
We spent a year renovating that, and then we built an extension off the back. So I did some of that myself. I did a lot of the roofing myself and some of the work that can be covered up. And then there was old sheds, because it was an old farmhouse. There was old sheds, and we linked extensions onto those sheds and renovated those as well. So I would have done a lot on the weekend and holidays on that, and obviously bringing in trades where required. But I like that physical work as well.
That's really interesting. The house is here or...
Back in Ireland.
Okay. How about something that's... What are you not very good at? What would you like to improve?
Delegation. lots of things. I think there's room to improve all the time. I think one of the things that I'm probably not brilliant at, and I would like to get better, is communication. I think communication is really, really important. I think that's something that I can do better. The whole marketing and communication side is definitely something that it's hard to get it right. But if you can get it right, it's really, really powerful. So I think that's an area that I can certainly do better on.
John, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking time to do this interview. How can people find you on the internet, or how can someone reach you?
So you can check LinkedIn. You can come on to the EDB website, and you can come on to the Startup Bahrain website. All channels, we'll get back to you. So LinkedIn. From a personal perspective, from an EDB perspective, the EDB website has my details on there. BahrainEDB.com and the StartupBahrain.com website has details on the startup side.
Great. Thank you so much, John.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thanks, Everett. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the Startups Middle East podcast. You can see the show notes and find out more about the podcast at startupsmiddleeast.com. If you like this episode, I'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on iTunes. Until next time.